Welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network, coming to you from the TeacherCast studios since 2011. Join us each week as we bring you the latest educational news, EdTech updates, and hottest interviews with today's most influential leaders in education. And now, for your host, Jeff Bradbury.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury, and welcome to the Jeff Bradbury Show. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about you, your branding, what the world sees in you, in your company, in your podcast, your speaking, your book, your authorship, everything that goes into the things that people think and say about you, and how you can build your own brand. I want to welcome on today, Mr. Sasha Strauss. Sasha, how are you today? Welcome to TeacherCast.
Glad to be here. It's awesome and excited to talk brand and EDU with you.
I love this topic, and I am so happy that you are here today. We've, of course, been talking about brands, marketing, all that great stuff on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and how did you get started in this world of branding and helping others build their own brands?
Sure. So professionally, I'm a brand strategist. Some people are lawyers, some people are doctors. My path was helping organizations and individuals communicate who they are and why they matter. I really firmly believe that that's when the world works best. So when I discovered this topic when I was 18 years old, when I was just starting as an undergrad at UC Irvine, it kind of changed my relationship with the world. If I went to a prayer hall with a friend or a classmate, took me to a new class subject, I didn't just sort of absorb the information that was as it was coming at me. I stopped to ask, why was it being communicated the way that it was? Why was it so particularly worded? And that led me to the profession of being a brand strategist. And I worked for all kinds of ad agencies and marketing firms and such. And then eventually in 2006, I started my own brand strategy consultancy called Innovation Protocol.
And you can find more information about that over at innovationprotocol.com. Now, Sasha, when it comes to teachers these days want to create something for themselves, whether it be a website, whether they're an author creating a book, whether they're into social media, YouTube. There's a number of things that we need to think about when we start to build a brand for ourselves. What are some of those things that an educator might want to start thinking about when they are taking that first step into creating their own personal brands?
Cool. So the first step that I would recommend to a teacher trying to build their own personal identity is the same recommendation I would have for a biggest company in the world. And that answer is you can't do this work well unless you've studied others that have done it well. So you might call that a competitive analysis or an influencer audit, but don't just start building your own personal brand. Learn from those that have already done it within the ecosystem you're trying to share within. So that could be on Facebook or on Instagram or any channel you want, but following and watching and witnessing brands that are doing an exceptional job and then learning from their best practices. That would be my number one recommendation. Go at it without judgment. Don't try to say, oh, I would do it better. Just watch and learn from their behaviors and you will already be ahead.
And I think that's the best advice. You know, if you're going to want to be a speaker, go to the conferences, listen to speakers, go onto YouTube, listen to speakers. You want to make a website, go look at all the other websites that are out there in your niche. When you're looking at those influencers that are out there, and I'm going to use that term lightly, but you know, if you are looking at those other people who are in your area, what are some of the things that you can be looking for? Like when you look at your peers, what are you actually doing? Are you studying them? Are you just noticing them? Are you writing down a couple notes? What goes into that process when you are out there doing some research?
Great. So when you're doing this kind of audit, the most important thing for you to do is separate out your personal tastes. If you like the color blue, you can't be angry that your competitor is using the color green and saying, well, I don't like the color green, so therefore their content isn't appealing. That's the wrong way to look at it. An objective brand strategist looks at all of those situations and only audits it from the perspective of a user who's landing on that website and what might they expect. So that's the first responsibility, is to go at your analysis objectively. Next thing that I would recommend is figuring out the value that they create. What service are they providing? What skill are they rendering? And how quickly you can determine that. And so that would be the second duty you have as you go about your perusing of competitors. Try to figure out how they're communicating, what value they bring, so that a person who lands on that website can determine whether they want to stay. And it sounds so simple, but it's actually incredibly hard to do. And so as your audience members are building their personal brands, just simply putting out a shingle and saying, this is who it is that I am, is only going to be so effective. Learn from your competitors who are really direct with what value they create.
One of the things that comes up a lot in these conversations is, you know, who are you building this brand for? And a lot of times when I work with websites, you know, yes, you're building a site and it's your website, but if you're not building a website for your audience, that way your audience can get what they want, are you really being effective? In other words, if you make a shrine to yourself, it's not always effective of I'm doing this for my audience, for my customer, my market, for whatever. Could you comment at all about building a brand for yourself versus building a brand for not yourself?
You're asking the right question. I want everyone to have a shrine to themselves. You can use channels like LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram to do that. But you need to know, this is a shrine to me. I'm showcasing all that I love, and I don't necessarily care whether a community is built around it. But as soon as you click over into, oh, I'm trying to engage people, get people to volunteer, donate, fund, whatever, well, then it needs to not be about you. It needs to be about them. Yeah. And Jeff, you and I talk a lot about Toastmasters. One of the first rules you learn in Toastmasters is, before you write any words for your speech, before you think about anything that you want to say, you have to answer the question, who is the audience?
Yeah.
Where are they coming from and what do they need from this experience? And so that holds true in brand building, is who is your audience and what do they need from this type of experience? And that should be the start of your constructive journey.
And there really is a difference between I'm building me, my brand, this is who I am, or I am the answer to what somebody else is seeking. And so I'm trying to fill that need. Is that a 50-50 split in your world? I mean, every time that you're working with companies, yes, you might be making a brand kit for an organization, but really the organization is the response to, I need something. And right. The answer is the organization. Like, is it a 70-30 split when you're trying to put these things together? How do you determine what kind of, you know, my brand, your brand, our brand?
It's a perpetual struggle. So don't feel bad that whether it's, you know, 30, 70 or whatever. I just went through this experience. My team built a new website for my professional speaking duties. If innovationprotocol.com is our consulting firm, SashaStrauss.com is for me as a professional speaker. And part of the journey for me was to not make it for me, to make it for people who are hiring professional speakers for conferences and summits. And so I had to, even though I'm a brand builder and I've been doing this a very long time, I still had to remind myself when we were building that website to not make it like my favorite place to land on the internet, to make it absolutely for exactly the way that people who produce conferences need to see it.
That is so true. And there's a lot of educators out there that kind of have that shotgun. They're starting out. They don't know what they want to be yet. So they try to be everything. And I'm even going to raise my hand and say, I've been doing this for 13 years and I'm still trying to be everything. So there's a lot of therapy in this one, by the way, just so we're on the same page.
I'm here for it and I need it.
When we're looking at that brand, I want to start where I'm starting with my students right now.
Okay.
Colors, right? There's a lot of science between colors. I like the color blue, but I don't necessarily need to be making a brand that is blue depending on where I want to go. Right. What can you tell us a little, you know, if anything, a little bit about color science or how not to use colors? I mean, I say a lot, you can spend a lot of time making something look hideous. So how do you find that right color combination that's going to attract others?
So this is just going to be some guy with an opinion, because I am not paid to create the visual identity. My team members are experts at doing those things. I'm a words and business idea brand builder. And the answer to your question is that there are only so many colors. And I know we learn Roy G. Biv and other boundaries of the color spectrum, but just for the sake of conversation here, not only are there only so many colors, all versions of all colors have been indexed. There's a guide. I don't have one here in my office, but it's called a Pantone guide. And it shows every shade of every color and a numerical value for it. And so that's how, I don't know, constructed and bound the color spectrum is. But to race to the end of the answer to your question, usually when you're going about creating a visual system for your audience, you've done your competitive analysis, you know what colors have been laid claim to. And so what's left are just a few color shades, color directions, and you use that set to determine what you're going to build. And the very, very, very end to your question is you also want to be ADA compliant and ensure that your content is directly accessible by all kinds of minds and all kinds of eyes. And so you see that what we just went through was a deductive analysis. We didn't be like, thumb in the wind, what's my favorite color this week? We started with what colors have already been laid claim to and what colors are visible by my audience, and then determining what color ecosystem we want to construct for our identity.
I love that, because when you're looking at things such as colors, and I'm just going back a couple of days ago, I'm doing this with my own middle school kids. I'm doing like a marketing class for middle school. And we're trying to figure out, how do you build a brand kit for the school? And I'm like, you can't just randomly pick random colors out. So we actually went into Canva. We found a couple of color swatches. I said, you know, which it doesn't matter what you pick, but pick something that was professionally put together. I showed them the color wheel, all of that stuff. And they're starting to understand, okay, it's not just like there is a science and a feel and a theory behind all of this. You mentioned that your focus is more on the words.
Right.
This is something that I feel a lot of educators need help with. We're all professional speakers, but sometimes to put our own words together, that's difficult, right? Even today, I'm struggling to say, are you going to learn something, or are we going to learn it together, or am I going to teach you? It's three different versions of the same thing, but from the listener's point of view, they come across completely different. What should our philosophy be, or what could our philosophy be on choosing language? Language in our logos, language on our website, our headers, our podcast. Like, what's your philosophy when it comes to just basic phrases that we can be using or even avoid?
Well, I'll tell you what I do, and it may not be everyone's practice, so just use me as a guinea pig here. But in my professional work, every day I'm engaging a different type of expert audience. Now, they might be software engineers for law practices. They may be physicians that work in a very specific indication. But the way that I try to use the right words is I try to emotionally embody that audience. Sounds strange to really think about this, but I try to watch videos and read up as best as I can so that I can feel what it feels like to be them. And that's my starting point in trying to, let's just say, do justice to the language that they speak. Another thing that I do, and this is what I use social media for, when our three kids are falling asleep at night and I'm sitting in the chair next to their beds, what am I doing? I'm on TikTok. And I'm learning the language of markets. Right now, I'm super interested in Gen Z lingo. It's so cool, so fresh, so interesting. And I'm learning it from educators who are hearing the language in their classroom. And so when I'm building a brand that's targeting Gen Z, I owe it to Gen Z to speak their language. And so that's me being an auditor, an analyzer, and learning to speak the words of my community.
Do you have a notebook with some of your favorite Gen Z phrases?
The one that I'm really fired up on right now is the Riz.
Oh my God. Okay.
Right? Am I right? Is it everywhere?
I learned that one in middle school, and I had to learn what it meant from a middle school child. And
We're behind, sir, and it's really a shame. Back when you and I were young and words like awesome and dutiful were just coming into the know, the scope of language is so much more limited. You know, we weren't connected by social media and learning words from other places. So,
okay, I got to ask, and I know this is, I'm going to keep this in the recording, but I'm only asking because I know that this is what the middle school child has said to me. Can you define the term Riz?
Well, I think it's the end of the word charisma. It's part of the word charisma. It's to have the charisma, to have the Riz. Like, wow, that podcast host was so cool. He totally has the Riz.
Oh, then I have a completely different definition of this term.
Oh, good. Okay, well, see, that's the beauty of modern language is that there isn't one way to see anything.
I was told that it is the art of picking up a girl.
Well, that is also charisma.
Hey,
so.
Hey, Mr. Bradbury, he's rizzing me.
Yes, he's using his charisma to get me. See, isn't this amazing that there's this whole ecosystem of communication and all it does is take a little patience to get it, to appreciate it. The other one that I really appreciate, I said this on stage the other day, I was emceeing a big nonprofit gala and the CEO of the largest hospital system in Southern California comes on stage and it's a black tie event, but he was wearing like cool leather sneakers, you know, this kind of thing that people are wearing now. And so then that's when I into the mic said, just so you know, Gen Zers would say that you got the drip, right? Have you heard that language in class?
No, I've heard a lot of language in middle school, but I haven't heard that one yet.
No, it's like the attire, the fashion of the time, the drip. I am by no means an expert in Gen Z lingo. I'm just giving you an example of how deep I go to speak, to understand the language of an audience. And then I use that to craft statements.
I've been back in a middle school classroom for the last 3 months and I have picked up more words, some that I can say in front of my kids, some that I will never say in front of my kids, but it's all there, but it's their brand, right? Again, it's them building themselves. So let's segue back onto the conversation here for a second. I don't know where we got that from, but if an educator is out there looking to build, you know, they've got their logo, they got their brand, they got their colors, they got all of these things here. You mentioned that, you know, the first thing was studying others. What are some of the other things that are on your list for what we need to be thinking about while we're building that brand?
Okay. So when an organization decides to solidify its identity, so there are the visual things that you mentioned, but there's just as many or more verbal things, what personality, what frequency, what vibe, you know, those types of things matter as much as what colors. The next thing you're going to be asking yourself is, in what environments am I going to be using this system I'm building? Am I going to be podcast hosting? Am I going to be at a parent-teacher night? Where does this energy need to manifest? Because then that will define what you need to build. So that way, when you take your verbal and your visual system, you're thinking about it in the context of the environment in which you're going to engage.
And so for that, would the example be if you're doing something for an older demographic, TikTok isn't where you're going to be building your stuff? Like, know where your audience is getting the feed from.
I'm a big TikTok fan. So before you decide that people of a certain age aren't using it, I highly recommend it. TikTok is homework. But let me just give you an example. So my students that I teach are all graduate students, MBAs, executive MBA, fully employed MBA. And they also have a lingua franca. They also have kind of a set of words that they use based on their current working environments. And so when I'm in the classroom, when I'm teaching those tough to educate audiences, I also have to take into account the world in which they're coming from. So I think it's the forever duty of a teacher, but it's even more of a forever duty of someone trying to build their own brand. Anyway, so that's the tactical duty of creating consistent vocabulary to express who you are and why you matter.
But when you're using that vocab, I mean, you still need to be true to yourself. I mean, you kind of mentioned it. You're getting some of the lingo and stuff in there, but if you get up and you start using speech that a middle schooler is doing, does that work? Does that make you look phony? Does that make you look not in?
No. And you notice I just did that with you. I just used that language, but I put it in the context of what it is that I do professionally, which is try to emotionally understand where audiences are coming from. And that's how I do it. I was on the stage for the American Academy of Neurosurgeons So these are all neurosurgeons in the audience. And this is for their highest echelon of neurosurgeons, the ones that are spine surgeons. Mm. And so who am I? Like, who? Why does this punk rock kid from Southern California get to stand in front of these neurosurgeons and tell them what they should be doing with their lives? But by using their language, by understanding the nature of their clinics, the pathologies that they pursue as specialties, they were able to click in with me and say, all right, this person is speaking my language. They understand the ecosystem I'm from, and therefore I'm willing to listen. And then I can get in there and rough them up about their personal brands.
How did that speech go? Overall, pretty good?
Yeah, it was, you know, I thrive with audiences that make me uncomfortable.
And really?
I don't know where it comes from. Yeah, because first of all of these people in the audience were, they had, you know, three times the education I've ever had. And they're producing new knowledge in the world. They're doing research. They're saving lives, making lives better. That's basically who was in the room. The other speakers on stage were professional athletes who had spinal surgery. And so I don't know anything about, I don't follow professional sports. And so when I took the photograph of the marketing pillar that had my face next to these two athletes and I sent it to my friends, they were like, oh my God, athlete A, athlete B. I'm like, what about me? What about little me on the same poster? And so to answer your question, the speech went really well because I learned the language of the audience and made them feel like I was worthy to have their time. And so I'm super proud of the response. The response was, in my world, important, and I'll end here, which was that the most senior, most well-known neurosurgeons in the room approached me privately throughout the next day saying, I haven't come to this conference for 50 years and I've never heard content like yours. And that made me feel like I did a good job.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I mean, but that just goes to show why your number one thing is important, right? I'm sure that you prepared by listening to other speeches, perhaps at neurosurgery meetings, right? So you were kind of already there before you got onto the stage.
That's how I live. I mean, that's exactly how I go about my days. And this is the magic of our time, whether it's YouTube or ChatGPT. If you want to delve into a new topic, you don't have to wait. Right. You can watch those videos. And I'm giving a speech to a medical organization in a couple of weeks. And I was able to watch a video online of a full surgery, end to end, of a patient who dealt with a specific indication. And what a wonderful world we live in. You know, you can download and get to know a category in an instant. And that's the joy I have as a professional speaker.
Well, let's go into that because, you know, we've already mentioned this connection to Toastmasters. For those who aren't familiar with it, how do you define Toastmasters to somebody?
Well, I actually know the technical answer to your question because not only have I been an active Toastmasters member for almost 25 years, but my company, when I started it 18 years ago, I required my first employee and every employee since then to be a member of Toastmasters. So the answer is, what is Toastmasters? Toastmasters is actually the largest professional development organization in the world, and it specifically focuses on communication. Whether that's communicating in a small group or a large group or on a stage at a conference, there are some things to know that will help make that much more successful. And of course, as the name suggests, it started with, oh, you're going to be giving a toast at an event. Where should your head be? How should you communicate what matters? And from there, it has spun up to, before great speakers, before great CEOs get on stage, they turn to these true fundamentals, and those fundamentals are like the skeleton key to great communication.
I've been in Toastmasters for the last 3 years, I believe it is, and completely has redesigned my speaking brand. Obviously, you find some value in it too. What value do you find in Toastmasters? Why do you make everybody in your organization join, and what do you hope that they get from it?
The thing I tell them is what I'll say to you and your listeners now, which is, everybody who creates work deserves to speak on behalf of that work. And instead of my employees doing work and then it being laddered up to me and I get to represent it, I've always required even interns. If you did this analysis, you came up with these concepts, you're going to be at the boardroom presenting that work to the client's leaders. And I know that's how I learned. And so I created that professional environment for my coworkers. And what you see is you see people arrive within themselves. They light up and it changes the way that they speak to their family members. It changes the way they socialize at a restaurant with friends. Let me give you one example. In Toastmasters, there's this circumstance where someone poses a question and then multiple people in the room have to respond to that prompt. And what it forces you to do, because you don't know if you're going to get called on, is it forces you to be ready to participate if you get called on and ready to basically address a question off the cuff. Well, that's what having a dinner party is. You're sitting around a table. There's a conversation happening. You may or may not be included, and you want to be clear and direct with your participation. So all that to be said, Toastmasters is a magical gift for professional and social development. And in fact, when we did our global research for that program rebrand, we actually concluded that most people who join Toastmasters and seriously participate are leaders, leaders in their schools, leader in their communities, leaders in their households. And that was a really cool accidental finding from our global analysis.
It's an amazing organization. I have a lot of teachers who, because they know that I'm in the organization, they say, you know, what do you get out of it? How do you do it? What's your secret? And I try to explain that a Toastmaster speech is nothing more than a lesson plan. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Tell me what you're going to tell me. Tell it to me. And then give me that call to action. Give me homework at the end. Instead of doing it in 45 minutes, you're doing it in 90 seconds or 5 minutes or 8 minutes, but it's just a matter of how quickly can you come up with that? And I don't know if you were describing the table topics section of the meeting, but essentially, you know, you are there thinking on your feet and you have 90 seconds to 3 minutes to provide an answer. And the whole concept is how much can you do on the fly? But it's the formatting of it, because anybody can talk for 90 seconds and ramble on. I've been doing it all show so far. But it's a matter of putting that into the format of, this is what I'm going to talk to you about. This is the actual meat of the subject. Let me recap. Thanks. Call to action. See you later. And Matt, if you can do that in 90 seconds, you can sit there in front of first graders all day.
And to upgrade it even further, not just first graders, you can sit in a room full of chief executives, decision makers of the world's largest organizations. Facilitated conversation is the key ingredient to success. And learning these skeleton key tactics from Toastmasters has been a true gift. And my favorite part is that sometimes coworkers come from non-Western cultures. And so in those Eastern cultures or South Asian cultures, being forward with your identity is culturally not normal. It's not necessarily part of the way that they exist. And so what Toastmasters does is that unlocks who you are and why you matter in this ecosystem. And it's so beautiful to see people go back to their traditional homes, go back to their traditional families for holidays, and have family members mention, wow, you're so much more engaged, or your spirit is showing up brighter. And all it is speaking confidence.
Trying to figure out how to take that format and make it be something that's just, it just happens. You know, you always start that speech with giving, you know, what is the situation? What's the problem? How are you solving the problem? Thanks. It really, you know, all the work that I've ever done with CEOs and trying to help them create their 60-second pitches. And then you do it as a 5-minute pitch. And then you do it as a 20-minute podcast. It really is getting that formatting down. And if you're out there, especially this time of year, you're interviewing, you're looking for a new career, you're looking to speak, the big conferences over the summertime are coming. Find your local, this is not a commercial, but it's turning out to be, but find your local Toastmasters group and just sit in there. You don't necessarily have to stand up, but just there's plenty of people that come to our chapter and they don't get up for the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, that's the best part of Toastmasters. And that's my favorite way to exist in the world is we live close to a university here in Los Angeles. And I have signed up for all the different departments, conferences, summits, et cetera. I just want to go listen to speakers speak. And from there, I take on the traits that I know resonate, stick, connect, et cetera. So first thing about Toastmasters is you don't have to get up and speak for weeks if you don't want to. Be there to listen, and that's where you'll learn. That's where you will learn.
If you're looking for more information, please head on over to Toastmasters.org. Or if you head on over to TeacherCast, I actually have some videos up on the website of some of my first presentations. And I think one of the first presentations I did was how do you give a Toastmaster speech? That was actually, right, I think, one of the first ones. And so check out all that stuff. I'll make sure that I got notes and stuff in the show notes for this episode. Sasha, I want to get back to one last thing about branding, because this is so important for people. Can you change your brand once you create it? And if so, what's your suggestions on making that decision? How should you, or should you just go, this is my brand, I'm sticking with it for 20 years?
Cool. So I'm actually happy to answer this question, because it's probably the opposite of what most people think. All brands, any brand you could name, from a religion brand to a university brand, evolves. It advances, progresses, metamorphosizes based on the nature of the world, ecosystem, customer. Those things are all fluid. So there isn't such thing as build a brand and leave it, build a brand and keep it. There's only such thing as build a brand and evolve it over time so it makes most sense to your audience and to represent your capabilities. So what we try to help all clients understand is there are certain things you want to hold fast to. You can call them sacred cows. You can call them permanent truths, and that's fine. But you need to have just as many things that you're willing to adapt. And when you decide how you're going to adapt those things, it may be the music intro to your podcast, or it may be your strap line. That's all great, as long as it has a relationship with the things that you hold fast to. And so never worry about getting out there and positioning your brand. Remember, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, you're already creating an imprint. Why stumble through it? Why hope people figure it out? Why not create some through lines so that my connection with you, my trust in you, my preference for you has something to hold on to?
That's all good advice. And, you know, if anybody's out there listening to this and has any questions, Sasha, where can they find more information out about the great work that you're doing?
Well, I'm not here to promote anything, but I'll just answer your question. Innovation Protocol is the best place to learn about these processes, these protocols for brand building. If you want to learn more about my speaking, that's at sashastrauss.com. And then if you want to connect and collaborate, I would go to LinkedIn, where if you search for my name, you'll find me.
We're going to make sure that we have all the links over on our show notes for this episode. If you're looking to build your brand, whether it be for an author, a podcaster, speaker, any type of content creator, head on over to sashastrauss.com. There's a lot of stuff there. You can always head on over to TeacherCast. We got a ton of marketing materials on how do you build your brand? How do you create that? And about 30 or 40 or so podcasts with industry leading experts, just like Sasha, helping us figure out how to do that. Even earlier this morning, we were talking about building WordPress websites. I just referenced some of the shows on there. Check out all the archives for the Jeff Bradbury Show. Learn how you guys can build your EDU brand today. Sasha, I love this conversation. Please come back on the show. I know we could do another hour on a number of topics, but thank you so much, my friend, for coming on the show today.
Truly my pleasure, Jeff. You've been working hard at this since 2011, so it's nice to be a part of your story. And I suspect you'll get questions, and if you just index those questions, I'm happy to come back and address each one of them.
If you guys have any questions, please feel free to reach out at teachercast.net/contact. And again, I want to say thank you guys for so much for making TeacherCast your home for professional development. And that wraps up this episode of the Jeff Bradbury Show. On behalf of Sasha and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to the TeacherCast Educational Network, hosted by Jeff Bradbury. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at TeacherCast or online at www.teachercast.net. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.